Hello and welcome to another edition of the MicroISV show here on Channel 9. I'm Michael Lehman, technology evangelist for the Microsoft Corporation focused on MicroISVs, and I'm joined by my co-host Bob Walsh of 47hats.com, which is his formerly mymicroisv.com, and Bob is also the author of MicroISV from Vision to Reality and a new book called Clear Blogging. And today we're joined by Lou Carbone, who is the Chief Experience Officer and founder of Experience Engineering, which is at experienceengineering.com. Welcome, Lou.
Thank you very much, Michael and Bob. It's great to join you this afternoon.
Awesome. So, Bob, what's the first question?
I guess the first thing we should do is let our listeners know that I saw Lou Carbone at Mix07, and the entire audience was just enthralled by what he had to say about experience and how marketing can be looked at in an entirely different way. And it really caught fire for me because I'm a developer. I'm not a real keen person when it comes to all the old marketing stuff. I'd like to go to something better for the people who actually favor me by buying my software. And when Lou was talking about experience, it just rang a real big bell there. So I guess a place to start with is, what is experience and what does it have to do with selling software applications or online services?
Bob, experience is the totality of what we feel about those elements that we experience with someone, a whole set of clues, if you will, that we process, that deal with how we feel about something's functionality, but also how it makes us feel and the feeling that it leaves us with about ourselves, so that ultimately an experience can be transformational. It can make someone feel more empowered, or it can make someone feel disempowered. And that's really what experiential value is all about, is how it causes people to feel about themselves in their relationships and working with companies, products, services. It's how we cause someone to feel in that experience that they have with us.
Well, when we do traditional marketing, aren't we trying to sort of lay out the arguments of why someone should buy a particular product? I mean, what does experience and emotion have to do with that?
Oh, it's huge. In fact, what we know is that most people make a decision based on both rational and emotional considerations. In fact, we create intellectual alibis to a degree. So when we're buying a product or service, we're looking at it, and we're thinking about how will it help me? How will it cause me to feel purchasing this particular product or service? So that if a dentist is looking at software in his practice, the key is does he feel more productive? Does he feel more connected to what's happening with patients? So it's understanding the emotional benefits that people derive, as well as the functional benefits.
When you say emotional benefits, can you give me more of an example of like, let's say, an application or situation where, you know, the thing gets done, but they're clueless about what type of emotional experience they're providing? And then maybe an example of somebody out there who gets it right in the, you know, the big traditional economy.
Yes, I think that when we look at the idea of experience, often organizations are very concerned about how someone feels about the company versus what the feelings are that they have about themselves. And even if we look at a small element of someone expecting their experience with a computer and the software loaded on to provide them with functionality, when that functionality is there and it works, I have a whole set of feelings. For example, currently in using Wi-Fi on a computer, when I have that, I feel completely empowered, I feel connected, and I feel mobility, I feel free. There are a whole bunch of things that I feel, and that knowing that is the ultimate benefit versus the real functionality of being able to make a phone call is or being able to connect is just a piece of what someone experiences. It's that whole emotional thing that's underneath it.
So really, it's about the features. Well, the features are there, but they're part of what delivers the experience. They're not the sum all and end all.
They're not the total experience. So that when we begin to look at an organization such as Intuit,
mm-hmm.
where making a call to the call center, it isn't just in the way that the software performs. It's the totality of the experience. It's when I open a box. It's the materials that are there. It's my ability to call, how I'm treated when I'm on the phone. And to get hung up sometimes, especially in innovative businesses, to think that what someone wants is just the innovation that comes in the technical innovation. It's really surrounded by so much more and so many other things that can cause a customer to feel frustrated, to feel lost, feel disconnected, and paying attention to every detail and every element that touches a customer in any way is critically important.
Well, let's break that down a little bit finer for a moment. Let's say I'm a micro ISV and I sell an online Web 2.0 service to privately run daycare centers that helps them manage who's there and getting paid and all those good things. Okay, really doesn't matter what they do, but they're a 2.0 online service. How should they take a look at this so they can see the things you're talking about?
Well, for a daycare center, the interface and the way that the website feels should feel very secure, should actually feel very caring, because what we're talking about is an experience that you're entrusting your children to basically strangers, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So that software, the interface with the customer, should really reflect a lot of the values and the feelings that people would want to derive from their experience with the daycare center, so that if I'm entrusting my children to you, the elements and the experience that I have online needs to be consistent with being reliable, dependable. The colors that I use would reflect feelings of security, comfort, trust. Everything about it would be synchronous with what that customer desires. And that adds benefit to the daycare center, because then the daycare center is reinforcing the emotions and the feelings, if you will, that causes a mom or a dad to entrust their child to them for the day.
You know, it sounds like, well, one of the things that Michael and I have talked to a variety of guests about is that you really have to understand the problems and needs of the niche that you're trying to sell your product or online service into. I think you're talking about going one step further, which is to understand their emotional needs and their sort of their emotional take on the world, so that you're consistent with that, not just their needs.
Yes. As a matter of fact, what we're beginning to see more and more of is what's referred to a B2B2C model, which is, if I'm dealing with a daycare center, and providing them with website interface and software, the greater value I can bring to them in terms of understanding their customers' emotional and rational needs, the more value I can bring to my immediate customer, the business, if I help them and I can demonstrate an understanding of the emotional and rational needs of their customer.
It almost sounds like three stages there when you take that example. You know, you might have a developer who can build a CMS system, content management system, and they get all the functionality right, but it's ugly. Okay, then you got the next level up where they get the functionality right and they understand the needs of that particular market, that particular, the customers they have. That's the second level. But the next level up you're talking about is you can get a big leg up on everyone else if you understand the emotional needs of your customer's customer.
Exactly, exactly. There are two levels in dealing business to business of gaining a competitive advantage. One is understanding the rational and emotional needs of your immediate customer. But the even greater advantage is what knowledge and what linkage can I bring to my relationship with my customer that demonstrates an even deeper understanding of their customer, their customer's emotional and rational needs. And that's what we're beginning to find more and more in B2B situations that become really distinctive competitive advantages when you're so partnered, if you will, with your immediate customer, that together you develop insights and are synchronous in understanding the end user, if you will, and their needs.
Well, let's go back for a moment to sort of the medium that all this is happening on for micro ISVs, and that's the internet. It might be a blog, it might be a website, but they don't have a commercial retail operation. What sort of experiential clues sort of set your teeth on edge when you've gone out there on the internet yourself? And what are some of the common mistakes that you're seeing people make in this area?
I think one of the biggest areas of learning that will come forth is the use of language and linguistics and symbols. The use of language, the difference between telling someone that they can pick up a car at a location, pick up the car at a location, or your car will be ready for you at a location, has very different emotional meaning.
Well, I remember the example you gave as kind of a paraphrase at your talk at Mix 07, the difference between a sign that says, you know, no exit and one that says, please exit this way. I'm paraphrasing it badly, but just the idea of the level of, I guess, respect, I guess you'd call it, that you're showing for your customers via these small little things that all add up to a total emotional picture, if you will.
Absolutely, Bob. The difference between someone saying, do not enter, on a sign, and someone saying, exit only, please, feels very, very different. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about error codes. I still, you know, when I have an error code come up often, I'm like, what in the world are they trying to tell me? And there isn't even an apology for the error code.
Okay, and that's a common problem whether you're desktop or web. Is
precisely,
you know, they make sense to programmers, but they don't make sense. And actually, it's more than they don't make sense. They don't treat the person getting the error code well, respectfully, and as a person.
Exactly. What it does, it doesn't even tell you what to do. Often, it's just you've received error code blank, 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 and it doesn't even say, you know, we understand that this could be frustrating, but here's what you should do. It's like, here's the error code. Okay, what does that mean? So
okay.
I think that the sensitivity to understanding how those signals and clues, mm-hmm. those symbols and the language that people process in an experience, whether it be on desktop or whether it be on the web,
well,
what's the impact on how it causes someone to feel?
Okay. Well, let's say I'm a developer and slash marketing person and slash a bunch of other things. It's not like I've got this, department of MBA, PhDs digging into the experiential doodah of everything. I mean, how does one or a few person company sort of run through the numbers to start thinking about this when they're looking at, let's say, first their website, maybe then on to their product?
It requires breaking habits that we're used to, which is looking at it only from one perspective. In fact, I recommended to someone a couple of months ago that it's almost like proofreading in the publishing industry. Mm-hmm. There's a technique of reading sentences backwards so that you can pick up grammatical errors. I would offer that there are things that we could do, whether it's even shifting our wristwatch from one side to the one hand to the wrong hand for an hour as we review the program, thinking of it from how does this cause someone to feel? And getting into that mode and reminding ourselves to stay out of the mode of the technical developer for a moment. And that's the way that writers actually will end up proofreading their own material, is some physical clue that clues us into thinking about it in a different framing versus the way we normally would frame reviewing a program or reviewing software, if you will.
So, Lou, let me ask you a question. In this whole process, from the point of view of the developers, obviously they're wearing all these different hats, doing all these different things. How important do you think this whole process is in terms of how people would recommend the application to a friend, about how they would feel about buying another piece of software from the same company? Obviously, technical competence and trying to keep the number of bugs down is important, and the how you interact with the application, that level of user experience is important. But just taking into consideration how the application treats you, how big of a how much time is it worth spending on from the developer? I mean, I think I know the answer, but you obviously spent a lot more time thinking about this.
Yes, I think that it's going to become increasingly important, and I think that it is extraordinarily important. What we know is that studies have been done at the Laboratory of the Consumer Mind at the Harvard Business School by Jerry Zaltman that tell us that these unconscious clues and signals actually impact people's buying and people's referral of experiences to other people more than the practical and functional aspects of an experience. That it deals with those thoughts that we have unconsciously, that we almost do this math in our mind unconsciously around how something causes us to feel. And that ultimately what it's all about is that you may be out there the first time with the only piece of software that does X, but as that becomes a more competitive marketplace, it becomes more and more important to understand the emotional feelings that are created.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So from the point of view of your average MicroISV developer, what kind of tools or resources are out there for them to be able to learn how to do this? And do you have any examples of products or services that you would rate very highly? Or do you have any rankings of things people can look at, instances, because people obviously infer the generalities from an instance much better than they go the other way, about instances of these are the really great ones and these are the really not so great ones?
Well, there are a number of things. There's actually a book that Jerry Zaltman has written, which is How Customers Think, that is a real interesting understanding into the unconscious thoughts that consumers have. There's a book that I've written, which is called Clued In, that's published by Prentice Hall. But I think that we're just beginning to see new tools come onto the forefront, that there are tools that are literally ways of taking what we call language prescriptions and then basically doing a word search, if you will, the same way that a word search is done. It's a search engine that will then align language to specific emotions and feelings. There are tools that we're using today that we're working and co-developing with various academics that deal with emotion mining and how do we understand the conscious and unconscious thoughts that someone's having when they're dealing with an experience, so that you can actually understand whether someone in their conscious opinions would say that something works for them, they're confident in it, they're inspired by it, yet unconsciously they may be very, very wary, they may be concerned, they may be afraid, they may feel insecure. It's trying to understand those gaps, and I think we're beginning to see more and more tools. So just as technology evolves, this whole understanding of experience, which has really come to the forefront in moving from an art form to a much more rigorous combination of art and science, there are tools that are being developed and that we're at the forefront of using almost weekly.
Well, just one follow-up question to that, and that is, your typical mycorrhizae, at least as I've been able to determine in talking with quite a few of them, you know, operates out of their home and spends most of their time interacting with their customers, you know, via the web or via email, and every once in a while, you know, via the telephone. So from their point of view, it's a little more difficult. They don't have the resources, say, of a Microsoft or an Apple or an Intuit to sit down and do a focus group and ask people how they feel about it. Are there specific questions that they might want to ask their customers or that they might want to ask their beta testers, you know, before they release the product in order to elicit this kind of feedback so that they can fine-tune their work?
Absolutely. In fact, focus groups are probably one of the least effective ways of getting this understanding. I think that the other thing that is difficult is that if we have a whole set of prescribed questions, what we'll get back from customers is predictive answers. What we end up doing and what the tools and techniques that are built around ideas and constructs and experience engineering today are really around open-ended, very probing questions. As a matter of fact, one technique that we utilize is a 2.5-hour interview around one question, and it's continually probing. And what I think it's difficult for an ISV that you know is very technical to put himself into thinking of himself as a psychologist primarily and saying, let the customer speak. Don't ask questions. Let the beta tester speak and look for what's underneath the language, what's underneath the words, what are the feelings that they have. And look at that, whereas it's so easy to look at these things on the surface and say, well, they thought it really functioned well and it was easy to use and it made them happy. But if you allow someone to talk long enough and continue to say, well, tell me more about that. Tell me more. Tell me how it felt when you pushed on that particular button or when you got this particular message back. And listening to the customer, truly listening rather than trying to direct a set of questions and interrogatives. It's one question and continuing to probe and then read between the lines. Let the customer create the constructs versus creating the constructs for them.
Okay, well, there is one catch here. Again, micro-ISVs are, you know, the smallest economic entities on the planet sometimes, like one person, maybe a few people. You know, the thing that strikes me about this is that it's you can get a lot of benefit just by thinking about this and being aware of it, that you don't need to get, you know, the resources marshaled where you can sit down with a customer for 2.5 hours face-to-face and probe their mind, if you will. But just by thinking about it from the customer's point of view and just sort of pretending to be a customer for a second and being that, what does this make it you feel like? That's a big step up from where most micro-ISVs are.
Absolutely. It's huge. And what we refer to as experience awareness and clue consciousness is the first step in evolving toward understanding experiential value. And the levels of sophistication are unlimited in terms of where this, I think, I only wish I was going to live another 50 years to see it evolve, but it's evolving rapidly in terms of disciplines, understandings, tools that are being developed. But it really begins with experience awareness, realizing that it's the total experience that someone has, and that it's all of the clues and signals that create those feelings that shape the attitudes that drive behaviors.
Okay. Let me ask you a kind of a related question I wondered about, because, for instance, you have the example of Harley-Davidson owners who are, for lack of a better term, fanatical about that particular product. I'm wondering, is group experience something that can be engineered as well?
I think that group experience, and we see it more and more, we see it in things like Flickr and the social communities that are created online,
mm-hmm.
where the ownership of the experience is by customers, mm-hmm. that they literally have taken ownership of the experience.
Break that down a little finer. I think I understand what you mean, but I'm not positive on that one.
The sense of community, and when people become emotionally engaged,
mm-hmm.
there's almost a compelling need to share that with other people. The same thing happens when we become socially disengaged or emotionally disengaged. But there's definite sense of wanting to share and have other people partake
mm-hmm.
in those experiences that are extraordinarily positive and to connect with other people on that. And that's what I think we're seeing happen over and over. We see it in brands like Harley, but you'll also see it in the many of the online communities that are beginning to develop, where this sense of connecting over an emotional feeling that is fulfilled by an experience is huge.
You know, I wonder if that might be the sort of the key differentiator of the social networks that are springing up like weeds all over the internet right now. You know, many of them have the same sort of features, that connect member to member and what have you, but some make it, some don't. Some get wildly successful, like, for instance, Facebook, to name one.
Yes.
So maybe what we're talking about here is, again, it's that awareness of what does the experience feel like to these members? Are they getting the positive feelings they need to be able to want to share this with other people?
And is the organization actually creating an opportunity to co-produce the experience, to co-own the experience?
That's kind of scary for a lot of developers, the idea of sort of letting go of control of your application.
Absolutely.
I guess large organizations face the same issue, if not more.
Exactly, because we lived in a world of make and sell versus mm-hmm. sensing and responding in a world of rigid manufacturing versus adaptive enterprise.
And now we're talking about a post-industrial world where, well, a lot of things are a commodity.
Exactly.
And yet we still all pony up, you know, $5 a pop for coffee at Starbucks because I walk into a Starbucks and I feel good about having a coffee.
Exactly. It makes you feel good about yourself. It makes you feel emotionally fulfilled on some level, a level that most of us don't even understand.
Well, it sounds like, to kind of wrap this up, what your research and work with large corporations and household name brands, frankly, has shown over about the 23, 25 years you've been doing this?
Well, probably closer to 30 plus.
Okay, 30 plus years is, if you ignore the emotional component of the connection you're trying to make with your prospective customers, if you make the mistake of thinking that having X number of features because everyone else has those features is enough, or having error codes that, well, it's an error code, what else do you need? But ignoring how people feel about that type of interaction, you're doing your micro ISV a grave disservice.
Not only a grave disservice, but ultimately your ultimate survival. We see in the basically the post-industrial age, organizations like Howard Johnson's restaurants, organizations that literally did not pay attention to managing what the experience felt like, but dealt with functionality and efficiency, and were not considered, not as concerned with effectiveness, mm-hmm. litter the landscape of all of these relics and companies that have vanished and disappeared and been merged and been acquired because they lost relevance, they lost emotional connection.
Well, I've seen that personally. You talk about some examples, but when I fly one particular airline, which I'll leave nameless, basically, you know, cattle get a better experience heading off to the stockyard. Yet I fly another airline that, you know, objectively does the same thing, and I've seen people clapping when they get off that plane. And it's the same objective experience. They fly from point A to point B. I think what we were talking about here is one of those things that micro ISVs have an opportunity to do that larger organizations, because they're larger organizations, aren't really quite as good at doing. We can get into our customers' heads and hearts and really think about what it is that they're experiencing and make that a competitive advantage, and we'll just let the large companies sort of miss that boat.
Precisely.
Well, Lou, I'd like to thank you very much for your time. This has been very interesting, and I'm looking forward to digging into this more. I guess one of the other hats that I can see that a micro ISV is going to need to wear is a customer psychologist. And I mean that in a positive sense, because if you make your customers happy, well, that's a good thing all around.
Absolutely. It brings value to your customer's life, and it'll bring more value both economically and emotionally to you.
Well, awesome. Lou, thanks so much for coming on the Micro ISV Show.
Thank you very much for having me, and I really think that the opportunity is virtually unlimited.
Oh, awesome. Well, this is Michael Lehman, technical evangelist at the Microsoft Corporation, along with my co-host Bob Walsh of 47hats.com, formerly mymicroisv.com, saying thanks very much for listening to the Micro ISV Show, and we'll see you next time on Channel 9.